This is the Frogcast.
Welcome to the Frogcast. We are excited here as we come down the home stretch of Big 12 play to be with you tonight and talk about how TCU had defeated Kansas this last weekend, 23-17. We will rehash that. We will talk about how it wasn't pretty, but it was a win. And shock of all shocks, we had some injuries in this game, injuries that could have potentially derailed our season even more. But here we are with a two-game playoff to end up Big 12 play. We'll talk about what happened in Waco and enjoy every moment of those Baylor tears to see that Oklahoma beat Baylor, as well as a few other things on this week's episode of the Frogcast. Well, fellas, from what you have told me and from what I witnessed myself, this was a low-energy game. In the stands, on the field, from the players, just the whole mood of Fort Worth all the way down to the weather. I'm glad we were playing Kansas because I don't know who we could have beaten. And for some strange reason, we always struggle with historically one of the worst teams in the Big 12. But Trey, when you look at the game this last weekend where TCU beat Kansas, sum up for me what the mood was like seeing TCU struggle against Kansas and have this moment kind of angst after having gotten beat the week before.
Yeah, you're right. Like, we are really lucky that we had Kansas this week coming off the loss. I mean, you know, it's disappointing to get that first loss, especially because it kind of, you know, throws a huge wrench in your entire plans for the season. You know, I think it's funny, like I saw pictures of the players coming into the stadium before the game, and, you know, some of them still had their Prove Them Right shirts, and I just thought it was like a little bit ironic because it's like we can't really prove them right anymore because we're like lost or whatever. But that's like how bad that Oklahoma State loss kind of messed things up. It like threw a big wrench into things. And yeah, I mean, it just seemed like, man, like even though there's still a lot left to play for, the fans, you know, didn't seem real into it. The team didn't seem too into it. You know, and I think obviously the loss played into that, but being an 11 a.m. start played into that a little bit. You know, it being Kansas, you know, contributed to that also, even though TCU and Kansas, one of those anomalies, like no matter, you know, how bad Kansas is, TCU can't seem to put them away. It's just like a dogfight to the end. But yeah, it was sloppy. They won. But you know, man, I mean, a lot of times I can try to find positives in a lot of these games. But there's not many positives for me coming out of this one. You know, Boykin's hurt. Hopefully it's not anything too serious. We haven't heard yet as of, you know, this time that we're recording this. I'm hoping it's not the dreaded high ankle sprain, you know, that it just always lingers more than, I guess, a low ankle sprain or a ankle sprain, whatever that is. But, you know, I'm still not impressed with the secondary. I mean, there's still having major problems. I don't know. To me, there wasn't a lot of positive to be taken out of this game besides they won.
Yeah, this was definitely a situation where you win and you just kind of forget about it and move on. Daniel, what did you see that kind of sums up your account of what happened with the Frogs and the Jayhawks?
Well, I was going to say the same thing, actually, that the best positive that came out of it was just that it, at the end of the game, we came out on top. But there were other positives. You know, Turpin finally got to bring one to the house. That was cool, you know, and he did a good job on that. I didn't have a very good position for it where I was standing, but I got to see it later on, and that was really impressive. And we got to see Foster Sawyer come out. And I thought that was a big plus. I had no idea what to expect of him. I don't guess I'd really have seen him at all. It's always been Bram Kohlhausen. And it was nice, and it was nice to see the crowd really get behind him. And he did pretty well, especially for a guy that just kind of got thrown in there. He didn't wake up that day probably thinking he even had the remotest chance of getting to play. So I enjoyed watching him and getting the win.
Yeah, seeing Foster Sawyer out there, and basically it wasn't pretty. He didn't complete a ton of passes, but he brought energy, he brought passion, and this is a Fort Worth boy that was a highly valued recruit out of Fort Worth All Saints that came in there when the game was on the line and did what he was supposed to do, which is make sure that TCU won the game. Let's actually just go ahead and take a second and dive right into this topic right away. So we had Bram Kohlhausen, who has been the backup quarterback for basically since the day Matt Jokel went down against Texas Tech last year. So for a year and a half, he has been the backup quarterback, and he has been in there in mop-up time. Behind him is Foster Sawyer, who was a four-star recruit, as we said, out of Fort Worth All Saints. Alabama wanted him. Quality programs wanted him. He stayed in Fort Worth and went to TCU. Where do you guys see him? So let's just say worst-case scenario here, Trey. Boykin has the unfortunate high ankle sprain. He's playing against OU in the middle of the second quarter. Eric Stryker twists that ankle. Who do you send in at quarterback if the game is 17-14 in Norman next week and Boykin goes out of the game?
No hesitation. I'm going Foster Sawyer. I always thought Bram Kohlhausen was just kind of that
it's like
trophy.
A Brandon Whedon.
Yeah, like, he's just there because he's the oldest dude to be backup, and, like, nobody really ever expected him to have to take on major playing time like he did in this game. So they knew, like, if they had to, they could always bring in Foster for this situation. I think they have to go straight to Foster if something happens with Boykin against Oklahoma. He didn't look like amazing. It's hard to judge him based on all the factors going on. I mean, your best receivers aren't playing, your offensive line's nicked up and all that. So it's hard to judge him on that. But what I did like he was fired up, man. He had passion. He was ready to go. Like, he didn't back down. He was running. Like, it was good to see all of that. So I think if that situation does come about, like, you have to go straight to him and just hope that, you know, he can get it done. Plus, like, get him, you know, especially, you know, I don't like talking about this, but if he does have to go in against Oklahoma, like, get him that big game experience. I mean, hell, like, honestly, our shots of making the playoffs are really, I think, a long shot at this point. I mean, obviously there's still possibility, but, like, get him that big game experience, like, right now. So, you know, I guess we're going to discuss this later on, Kenny Hill, and then moving forward and all that. But, like, get him, you know, a feel of playing in a hostile environment. Like, I've been to a big game in Norman before. I mean, it's going to be a tough game. It's going to be loud. It's going to be rowdy. It's at night. Like, you might as well just throw him in the mix and see what happens. It's kind of how if that's what it comes down to.
He might even excel in that type of situation. He's
right.
He's got that. You know, he's got some serious attitude. Like, you know, they were pushing and shoving and someone ripped his helmet off and he was going crazy. And, you know, he came out and for the one play, then he came right back in and he was just fired up. And I'm surprised. I don't know what energy the team or the crowd would have had if he hadn't, you know, wouldn't have been him doing all that if we left Kohlhausen in the whole time.
Yeah, I think we're just glad that we had him. And like you said, Daniel, I thought that was pretty good insight. He didn't wake up at the hotel at 6:30 that morning thinking, man, I'm going to have to go play the whole second half just to win this game. But he did, and he went in there, and we won. So, Daniel, is there anything else that you saw from Foster that gives you any confidence about him going forward? Not simply that, you know, he could squeak out a tough moment in a hostile environment. But even looking forward to next year, is there anything you see that says this guy should lead the Horned Frogs going forward?
Well, I haven't seen Kenny Hill play. I think we're going to talk about that. But he, you know, from being just thrust into a situation like that, not having time to mentally prepare, I think he did pretty darn well. And I think we got to see a good representation of what he at his very worst probably would be. I think he would... Like, even after this first drive, he comes back out. He seems much more calm. and ready to go, you know, just getting the jitters over with and all that. I think he's probably it. I really don't even know. Without having seen Kenny Hill, I mean, I saw him play when he was at A&M, but it's a different system. But I think the kid's got a lot, and I'm excited to see, you know, even whichever one wins out. I think, I don't know, it's going to be really good going forward.
You know, if you go back just a couple of years to 2012, we had the unfortunate incident with Casey Paw-Haw, where he spent the rest of the season getting the help that he needed. And we had Boykin, who was, by his own admission, I'm sure, not where he wanted to be. And then there was basically nothing. We got caught without a quarterback in 2012. If you look forward to 2016 and 2017, we are going to have the biggest embarrassment of riches at quarterback. We're going to have, as we said, Kenny Hill, who started at A&M last year, who is going to be fighting for the job. We have Foster Sawyer, who we saw yesterday, that is not going to go down without a fight that we saw. Grayson Muhlstein, who was out of Decatur and was a highly ranked quarterback, also in the same class as Foster Sawyer. Next year, we have coming in, one of them is a spring enrollee, Brennan Wooten out of San Angelo Central, who is a hoss and has passed for, I think, 4,500 yards, as well as Derek King, who is one of the top mobile quarterbacks out of Manville down in Houston. All of those guys coming in. And then bringing up the rear in the 2017 class is the number one mobile quarterback in the country, Sean Robinson, out of Denton Guyer. He's coached by J.W. Walsh's dad. Looking into the future here, who do you guys see, knowing that we haven't seen anything from Hill, but we've heard some amazing reports, not the least of which from Travis Brown, who was on last week. What do you see is the future for the quarterback for the Frogs? I know we can't keep all of those guys, but do you think that Foster Sawyer is going to be able to fight for that next year, Daniel?
Yeah, definitely. How it works out, I don't know, but he's not going to just, you know, be like, okay, you know, just give up the job to Kenny Hill or anybody else. I assume it'd be Hill. And whoever wins out is just going to be the better for it because they're going to have to compete at such a high level in order to make the job. So, and you're right, we're not going to be able to keep all of those guys. I don't know who's going to be the best. Man, looking forward to, like, Sean Robinson and stuff. It's just, like you said, an embarrassment of riches. So it's going to be some good times going forward.
What do you see at the quarterback backlog going forward, Trey?
Yeah, I'm like y'all, we haven't really seen Kenny Hill since he was at A&M. We've all heard good things about what he's done in practice. So I kind of lean towards him winning the job next year. And then I don't know, we'll see. I tend to think like Kenny Hill fits maybe what these offensive coordinators want with a little bit more mobile quarterback than Foster Sawyer, although he's not like a statue in the backfield. He can run a little bit. It is silly kind of how much talent the Frogs have coming in, because I'm like excited about Derek King or you know, however you say his first name. Just, I don't know. Like, I follow somebody on Twitter that tweets a lot about him. And, like, so, like, I see, like, random highlights and stuff. And, like, he seems like he's going to be a really solid player. And then, like y'all said, we have Robinson, too. I don't know. It's exciting to see. I just hope that whoever wins it next year, we don't take too far of a step backwards. I mean, I'm not expecting us, you know, to be right back, say, in the mix for a playoff spot. I'm thinking, you know, maybe we take a slightly step back next year before taking another big step forward. But I hope they just get it right, and we don't have to go back and forth, kind of like what A&M is doing now between, like, Allen and Murray and, you know, which one is the best. And then I don't know. I just hope we get the decision right, whoever we go with.
Yeah, that is a great compare and contrast, because that is a soap opera from everything I understand down in
College Station. I mean, and then, you know, they might end up losing one of them, or we're going to end up losing one or two, or who knows. And you don't want to lose the one that was going to be the one because you messed it up. But it seems like TCU kind of has done a good job of that, going from, you know, Dalton. And I still think Paul Hall was a really good quarterback, and I think he would have been a really great quarterback had he not had the issues he had then going to Boykin. So I feel like they've had a good track record here over the last few years that they will make that right decision. But yeah, just when you look at A&M and, you know, how they go through right now, and they could possibly lose one of those guys. And I think both of them are good, but it's like if they lose one, like, I don't know, rambling, but because it's just quarterback such, you need, that's just such a critical position, you know. It's just so hard to miss. You can't miss on that position. I mean, if without Boykin this year, there's no way we only have one loss. Like, we're probably like a 4-loss, 5-loss team without Boykin this year. That's how big of an impact that position has, you know?
Oh, absolutely. We are, you know, we're fighting for a bowl game if we don't have Boykin. I think we all know that. I think we all saw that yesterday, or saw that on Saturday. So
yeah, we're the Longhorns right now.
Hold on now, man. Just back that truck up a little bit.
Now, you don't need a good quarterback if you're LSU or something like that. You just need a guy who can stand there and say, hey, and then hand it off. So,
but in the Big 12, you have to score those points. That's what also, like, I mean, I don't know if we want to get into the whole Joel Klatt situation where he's been tweeting, and which I love how he's been tweeting all of that stuff out. Like, really, and honestly, like, look at the SEC. Their quarterbacks aren't that good. But in the Big 12, you have to have a quarterback. Like, you have to be able to score points, because if you can't score points in this league, like, you're not going to win. You can point at TCU. Like, even if you have an elite defense, like, TCU's defense was still good when they first joined the Big 12, but they didn't have the offense to keep up and win these games. And you have to have that shit. You have to.
Oh, it's absolutely, it's mandatory. It is absolutely mandatory that we have that. I mean, you don't have to look any further than, I mean, we all kind of laughed about it. Look at Austin. Look at the University of Texas. I mean, they haven't had a quarterback since Colt McCoy got hurt in the national title game. That is embarrassing for that program. But if you're in the Big 12, you cannot get caught like that. So, you know, we took two quarterbacks in the class of 14. We're taking two quarterbacks in the class of 16. That's probably what it is. Every other year, we're bringing in a couple of new quarterbacks. And I don't know if it's mandatory that Kyle Allen transfer here as part of our agreement for joining the Big 12, but A&M's backup quarterback seems to transfer out and transfer to TCU every year. And we'll just take them all. We need them all. So, yeah, you can't win if you don't have a quarterback in the Big 12. Just to tag on what you said to transition moving forward, Trey, if you're not following Joel Klatt, if you're not seeing his videos, his interviews on The Ticket, if you're not following him on Twitter, you have got to do that right now. He is the only person that is advocating for the Big 12. He is the only person that is at least looking at statistics and not merely, well, of course you should have Alabama in the top two. They're in the SEC. That guy knows what he's talking about. He might be biased, like we said last week, but it's about damn time we had somebody that had a Big 12 bias, because we got Disney with an SEC bias. So get on there and listen to Joel.
Check out his Twitter. He's also got a really good podcast. He breaks down X's and O's. He's really, really smart. I was actually really surprised when I listened to his podcast. So everyone needs to check that out.
Yeah, he's a big Big 12 guy. He knows football. He loves our conference, but he knows football. So hi guys, we're gonna go ahead and jump to a game. I don't know if anybody saw this. Little school down in Waco, right on the river. Have a stadium that looks like a toilet, and from what I understand, Baylor got beat. Daniel, did you see that Baylor got beat?
Hell yeah, that was awesome.
Oklahoma beats Baylor in Baylor, their first loss at home since Boykin laid the wood to that punk down there on the goal line, and we beat him in 2012. That was amazing. I had predicted that at the beginning of the season. Stoops, he probably could care less about getting revenge against TCU. He wanted revenge against Baylor, and they got it. And I got to tell you this, man. Outside of Boykin, you know who my favorite quarterback in the country is? Baker Mayfield. That boy is a baller. He comes to play. So either one of you guys have anything you want to share on all the Baylor tears that are flowing down there in Waco?
Well, basically, I mean, I root for two teams to get in the playoffs, TCU and anybody but Baylor. And with them losing, I think that, you know, obviously hurts their shot of making the playoff a lot, and I love it. And because personally, you know, I couldn't stand seeing them make the Final Four, much less having the shot at winning a national title. Like, I don't know if I could survive that. So
I'd move to Canada.
I don't know if I could take that.
God, it's like when Tech wins eight games. At least it's just eight games when they're uppity. If Baylor got in the playoff, I would be done with football.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess the big controversy from this game was the fake injury. Yeah. You know, get down, stop the clock type play. I guess
for what it's worth, Herb Street has retracted his criticism within like the last hour and a half on Twitter, and the guy was actually hurt, according to Herb Street.
Yeah, I don't know.
Then why is he back in like 2 minutes later?
I'm just
presenting the facts. We report, you decide.
Just for the sake of this podcast, I'm going to say they were bullshitting to pile on Baylor more. It looked suspicious at the time. I mean, it looked like everybody at the time said it was shady, looked shady. So, you know,
that's right up the rally. Clean program they run.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. They did ask Briles at the press conference. He said he didn't know anything about it.
Of course.
Never called
him. Of course.
Oh, yeah. This is why we have our own podcast, so we can say those things. So.
The least unaware head coach in the nation of what's going on with this team and shit. Like, dog. What? Like, you never know what's going on. What? How do you never know about anything besides fucking the dorks on the sideline and your son's taped fingers calling your lame-ass offense? Like, God, I hate them so fucking bad.
Yeah, we're going to get Mark not safe for work at the iTunes now.
Man. They are terrible.
Yeah.
So glad they lost, man. Like, I couldn't take it. I couldn't take it. And, I mean, the Black Friday game, I guess, has lost a little bit of its, you know.
Now it's just clean old-fashioned hate.
Yeah. And
they're, we could still both be playing for the Big 12 title that day or, you know, some very, you know,
right.
Depending on what happens at Bedlam. But it is now just, I hate Baylor and I want to watch their campus burn to the ground and nothing else. And I'm completely fine with that.
I'd pay to watch that, yeah.
Well, Daniel, there's a thread on Killer Frogs called Baylor Tears that's like 350 pages that is roughly the same eight people just telling good Baylor jokes. I've noticed that you are one of the frequent posters on that. What generates your hate of Baylor, and how did you feel when you finally saw Oklahoma take them down?
I couldn't tell you what generates it other than I'm just supposed to hate Baylor. I mean, I just always have. But, yeah, I do post there a lot, and it's just because I hate him so much. But watching, that was great because you kept seeing, okay, they can do it. Finally, someone is going to be able to do it. And then he throws, like, an interception or whatever. I don't remember the specifics. I was just, if something good happened, I'd get up and run around and go outside and scream and all that. So It was nice to see that they are completely, completely beatable, even down home at the toilet where they've never lost. Finally, they did. So they can shut up about that. I have to wonder if what if Seth Russell was playing? Would that be a completely different game?
It might be a different game, but Seth Russell can't tackle P. Ryan, and Seth Russell can't slow down Baker Mayfield. And Seth Russell doesn't make Sean Oakman look like he's at a nursing home when he doesn't get to make a big tackle. I mean, Russell is a great quarterback. There's no denying it. He seems like a classy guy. But there are so many things that Oklahoma just dominated that game. The trenches, I mean, I don't think Billings and Oakman had much of a game. And I think it was because Oklahoma just came to shut him up front. And Russell, you know, maybe he could have inspired him, but he's not the one.
I think – Oklahoma had a really good, I feel like, game plan for attacking them. Like you mentioned, the trenches. Like Oklahoma had the running game that I think Oklahoma struggles with, especially like a power type back who's big, hard to take down. And they did a really good job on slowing down Corey Coleman. I think those were like the two keys that really helped them win that game. Plus, obviously, they got good quarterback play and all that type of stuff that you would want. But I think they came in with a really solid game plan to beat them.
Yeah, they did. They came in with a really solid game plan to beat them. And they did what nobody's done all year. I mean, Corey Coleman went in the witness to protection program in that game. That was he was non-existent in that game. Katie Cannon needs to worry about beating Oklahoma more than he needs to be celebrating Oklahoma State. So that felt good. And then who's that poor punk? Lee that dropped the pass in the end zone. I mean, that was a big play, and he just kind of let it slip. Maybe you should tape his fingers up too. So
touchdown Walrus. He got a
they touchdown. Did have – yeah, touchdown Walrus scored.
Yes. Yes. And 66% of the time that he scores a touchdown, they lose.
I don't know how in the rain how that field can take someone of that size stomping around. You know, I don't know.
The good thing is he can just jump in the river right there and swim home.
That's right. He can. It's always fun when I watch these games, when my wife casually watches these things with me, because she doesn't know anything about sports other than she really likes that Patterson's passionate and she knows who Boykin is. And there was a thread about similar to this on Killer Frogs, I think. But when you just watch those goofballs jumping up and down, and you got some coach that's like three coaches with their arms back, like keeping them off, like they're about to rush the stage at a Pearl Jam concert. I mean, like that, if there is ever, you know, bums on scholarship that are a reflection of the dorks in the stands, that is that moment. That is, she was commenting about, like, who does that? I mean, I guess the only thing that would top it is playing leapfrog. That is just such a dorky fan base with the players to match it. And I can't believe Division I athletes in the state of Texas want to go and jump up and down like a bunch of idiots and then have the Baylor line where people fall down and get run over to be what inspires them. It just blows me away that those dorks.
The leapfrog thing, I guess I get, because that's, you know, the Dungeons and Dragons nerds and all that doing that kind of stuff. But then to have these guys, and it's orchestrated. They're, you know, okay, it's time to jump up and down, and I'm going to stand here and pretend to both pump you up. And then once you get excited, I have to hold you back because you're going to just storm the field. And then they wore the masks. And, I mean, what? Who thought?
They look like they're an anonymous.
Yeah, I mean, who thought this was a good idea? And first of all, on TV, when they zoom in, you can be kind of deceived thinking maybe that's a bigger group than that, than what it is. But if they kind of zoom out at all, you realize it's, you know, 10, 15 guys max. And on that big field, they look really out of place and stupid. And I'm constantly blown away that that's supposed to be some sort of motivator or intimidator. It's just insane.
I know. Just enjoy that you didn't go to Baylor. That's all I got to say. Just be glad.
Oh, hell no.
Thank God every day.
Every single day. Thank you, little baby Jesus. 6 pounds, 7 ounces. We appreciate it. So the school that will mention Jesus at every turn, but doesn't quite know how to put it into their HR policy. So, all right, moving on. We're done trashing Baylor. I hope that this website ends up on, like, Baylor fans. I hope that we get trashed on Baylor fans. I would be just fine with that if somebody wants to go post
it. Fine with me. I'll go post it myself.
I'm sure you will. I have no doubt about it. All right, well, the problem for the Frogs is the team that just whipped up on Baylor is University of Oklahoma, and that is who we are playing this Saturday. 7 o'clock, ABC, national television, the whole world is going to be watching, and we're going to say two things at the same time. I believe in the Frogs, I believe in this team, they have gotten this far on pure guts, and I don't have any doubt that the best hand that we are able to play and put the best team forward on that field, they're going to play with everything they've got. Also true, we are limping around, injured, running into a buzzsaw at a night game at the roughest environment in the Big 12, one of the toughest places to play in the country. Trey being able to balance those two things of just like absolute objectivity and belief in this team, what do you see that is going to be needed for us to be able to get a win in Norman?
Yeah, so start off with a real quick story. When I worked for ESPN Radio, I helped with the Bedlam game between Oklahoma and Oklahoma State in Norman, and was on the sideline for that game. And I know that's a rivalry game, but that is just such a tough atmosphere to win in. Obviously, Oklahoma's really hard. And so this is just going to be a really tough game. And for me, really, the defensive line is going to have to take control, and the secondary is going to have to play better. And I feel like those are really kind of lame keys to the game, or what has to get done. And they're kind of, you know, you could say that for any game, but like with this TCU team, like I have not been impressed with the secondary against Oklahoma State. Wasn't against Kansas. They're just young and experienced, not that good. I don't know, the combination of all that stuff. So I just think Oklahoma has that kind of combination of talent and factors that's really a bad matchup for TCU, because they can run the ball if they need to, and they can throw the ball with good receivers, plus their quarterback is mobile, so he can run too. I just think those are three really hard things to defend. And then, you know, when you look at the strength of TCU, their offense, Boykin, I don't know anything. I personally believe Boykin will at least give it a go and try to play. I don't know if he's going to be 70% or 80%, but I do have a pretty good feeling that he's not going to be 100%. So that sucks. Dotson, he's not going to be 100%. So it's tough. I mean, this is going to be a really hard game.
At the beginning of the year, one of our earliest podcasts, you predicted that if we had a loss, it was going to be at Oklahoma.
Yep. And this game's worried me from the beginning, man.
And when we made those predictions, I mean, we were in much healthier shape, you know, both sides of the ball, than we are going into this game. So I absolutely agree with you with just about everything that you said. Daniel, anything else you want to add on the Frogs and their need to be able to get what they need to do to get a win in Norman?
Well, that's about it. It just seems really scary how well they came out against Baylor at Baylor. This is going to be in Norman, which is always tough. And then they seem to be peaking at the right time of the year as we are continuing to crash and burn throughout the year. You know, we still only have the one loss, but we're managing to pull out some wins. But it's going to be really, at best, I think, ugly. And I don't know, with Boykin the way he is and Dotson the way he is, you know, having to rely. I mean, who's left? Lissenby and Nixon, and, you know, they'll probably put Aaron Green out there to receive Turpin. Well, yeah, Turpin. I don't know. It's just it's tough to say, because yeah, it's Kansas, so they should be crap, but they always play as tough, and then we don't know the quarterback situation. I think Trey's probably right. He'll probably at least give it a go if he's not able to do it, or at least not a whole lot. thankfully, we'll probably have Foster Sawyer, you know, working out with everybody in anticipation of having to go. So he might have an extra good game based on that kind of practice. But it's going to be really scary, and I'm kind of not looking forward to it. But we'll see.
At least the positive is you always in the back of your head can say they lost to Texas.
Yes.
So yeah. Like, you always got that going. We got that going for us. This team lost to Texas.
You know, Bob Stoops, basically since the 08 season when they got beat by Florida and Tebow for the national title, he can only coach in one of two modes. They either play like a team that's going to go 12-0, or they play like a team that's going to go 8-4. And it's really only one of the two. You know, I guess when you get beat by Texas, you're a team that's like 2-10. But they, you know, they either just lay the wood to people like they did in the Sugar Bowl against Oklahoma, like against Alabama, like they did against Baylor last Saturday night, or they go out there and they find a way to get beat by Kansas State, or they find a way to get beat by RG3 in that Baylor team, which is nothing compared to Baylor now. So in the back of my head, I've got this idea that, you know, big game Bob has got a choke in him this year, maybe one more. He's got another choke in him. And there's no reason why it shouldn't be against us. Last year when they got beat by Oklahoma State, I mean, that is – he has that in his cycle. That just seems to be something that happens, and he's only done it once this year. So I see no reason why he shouldn't just offer that up a second time. So, yeah, this team got beat by Texas. That is embarrassing. This is a bad Texas team.
It's still hard to even comprehend. Like, how did they lose to Texas? Like, how?
Well, how did Alabama lose to Ole Miss? I mean, that's a good question. Right. But Ole Miss is going to go 8-4 and go to a bowl, but Texas is not going to go to a bowl, and they're not going to touch 8-4. So, yeah, I have no clue. I honestly have no clue how that happened. But the thing is, since that game, they've been taking everybody to the woodshed. I mean, that the next week is when they just went and crushed Kansas State, who Baylor struggled against, who we clearly struggled against. So, Lincoln Riley's got them rolling. Bob Stoops has got them rolling. You know, the upside is Mike Stoops is still calling the defense. So, yeah. I think the key for me is, if we can shut down Sterling Shepard, who is just a boss, that guy is a great – he should be like a lifetime achievement, Big 12 player of the year. If we can shut him down and have a spy on Baker Mayfield, if we can do those two things, we'll be in a position to be really competitive, and that's all you can ask for, especially going in to the fourth quarter. Well, independent on how we do this weekend against Oklahoma, it is a convoluted and messed up Big 12 race. We got Oklahoma State at the top, who should have lost to Iowa State, but didn't. That was disgusting to be able to watch, to be honest. I don't know what made me feel better, if Iowa State would have won or Oklahoma State ended up winning. Of course, we have everybody else stacked up with one loss. Oklahoma with one loss, Baylor with one loss, TCU with one loss, still with the rest of the round robin to go there. Of course, you can't talk about this without talking about the painful fact that Big 12 was left out last year, and of course the Big 12 is going to get left out this year. Trey, when you look at best and worst case scenarios for the Big 12, for TCU, and for the conference as a whole, what do you see as some options that could unfold and perhaps the fallout that could come from that?
Honestly, at this point, it's tough because I always want chaos and disruption, and I want everything to be hard, and I want it to be difficult on the committee and all of that. And you know, obviously, I want TCU to get in the Final Four, but I'll say this: I think what would be best for the Big 12 conference is for Oklahoma State to just win out. They go undefeated. I don't think the committee will leave out an undefeated Big 12 team. And based on what I've seen, I think Oklahoma's a pretty good team. Oklahoma State, sorry. Then on the flip side, my red devil on my other shoulder says I want Oklahoma to win out and them to get left out of the top four by Notre Dame or whoever, you know, the top four shakes out to be, but Oklahoma to get left out because I think, you know, they're the blue blood school with the big fan base that I think could really raise, you know, the discussion about the playoff and what it should be, why the Big 12 has been left out 2 years in a row, why it's not, you know, 6, 8, 15, 16, whatever you want it to be, why is it not bigger? And I think that would be interesting. But on the flip side of that, I think if Oklahoma won out and got left out, does that start their wheels turning of, hey, we need to get the hell out of the Big 12 because this conference is not in a good position? Or, you know, it could also then again maybe spur some conversations that need to be had, get, you know, the conference to come together. It doesn't seem like the conference really together. It's like Texas is off doing their own thing. You know, they're struggling, but they've got their own network. So they're like, what the hell ever, we're making money. TCU and Baylor are going at it, but Baylor, you know, hires a PR firm and trashes the conference last year and causes a whole, you know, uproar and all that crap that they did.
I don't think Art Briles gets the Christmas card from Bob Bowlesby.
Yeah, right. right?
Yeah.
So, you know, there's just all that going on, and I would like to see it happen. But, man, there's also, you know, a part of me that looks at the Big 12, like, right now, and just being realistic, like, do any of these teams look good enough to deserve a top four, or do you see any of these teams being good enough to actually go and win it? Because, you know, I thought TCU, a healthy TCU at the beginning of the year, was good enough. And then I thought Baylor would be right there, but they've had the struggles that I kind of thought they would have is their defense. I just don't think their defense is strong enough to get them to where they need to be. You know, Oklahoma has looked good, but I mean, damn, like we said, they lost to Texas. Like, I know it's a rivalry game, but, you know, if you look back at last year, say Baylor and TCU, both of them had better losses than what Oklahoma has right now. Cause, you know, or I guess TCU had the better loss to a higher ranked Baylor, who was in the top 10, and TCU still got left out. And then Baylor obviously had lost to West Virginia. They still got left out. So can Oklahoma have one loss and get left out? I don't know. It's a whole thing.
But who got in last year above both of us? It was Ohio State with a crappy loss to a 6-6.
Right, with one loss.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's like, I don't know. But like I said, there is a part of me that would like to see Oklahoma win out, then get left out. But hell, I mean, obviously at the very end of the day, whatever scenario could get TCU in, or at least get TCU to win the Big 12 championship, that would be great. But I think what's best for the conference is for Oklahoma State to win out and get in the top four.
Daniel, what do you think of the chaos at the top of the Big 12?
Well, getting whooped by Oklahoma State and hadn't really seen Oklahoma do a whole lot up to that point, I thought, okay, good, Oklahoma State's going to take care of business. Maybe they'll get in, and I'm confident with that. Then they pull this crap with Iowa State yesterday, and I was like, well, crap, you know, maybe they're not that good. But Oklahoma showed up, took care of business big time, and I'm all for Oklahoma getting in, and I think, especially if they get their way into who's in the four right now, they shouldn't have much of a problem, except maybe Alabama, because Ohio State is, you know, the perennial fraud that they are. And so I think they would have a good shot. Yeah, I would like to see them get left out of the Big 12. Part of me does, because of all the stuff you mentioned. But I'd like even more if they went in and won the whole thing. And, you know, maybe that just completely raises the profile across the board.
Yeah, the cleanest thing to happen is Oklahoma State win out and be able to represent the conference at 12-0. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think they're going to – I honestly think they're going to get beat by Baylor, and then I think they're going to get beat by Oklahoma. And so if that's going to happen, that's where I'm like, well, we should just win out and let Oklahoma State lose twice so that we can, you know, be in a position to be able to get a shot if some things break our way. But the one that I think is best for TCU in the long haul is what you said, Trey, is let Oklahoma, you know, if Oklahoma wins out and gets left out of the playoff, I think all of these things that people kind of kvitch about in the Big 12 would be brought to the head in one meeting, whether that is expansion or let's just split this thing up and get everybody to stop complaining about it. I would love for Oklahoma to get in and win it all, because I think they have the potential to do that. But I also think it would be great if they got left out, because everybody said last year that if Baylor or TCU would have been Texas or Oklahoma, they would have gotten in. I don't know about that. I think that there is a, you know, Joel Klatt here. I think there is a massive bias against the Big 12 for a variety of reasons, not the least of which is some loud, pushy people on that playoff committee that think if you don't punt 17 times a game, you're not playing real football. So we just might have the cards stacked against us. All the things I like about the Big 12, nobody else likes. I like the offense. I like the round robin. I like the regional conference where you can drive to every game, and nobody else seems to like any of that. So, well, we will all find out next week where things shake out. We have Baylor playing Oklahoma State at roughly the same time that TCU is playing OU. And so by the time we go to bed on Saturday, we will know a lot more about this team and about this conference than we did just 24 hours before. Well, fellas, that wraps up this edition of the Frogcast. Much like what we've said at the beginning, we barely mentioned the Kansas game and then moved on to a bunch of other stuff. Hopefully at this time next week, we're here talking about TCU's big win over the University of Oklahoma. That is what we want, and that is what we hope for with a healthy Trevon Boykin to be able to go to Norman and get a big win. So for Daniel Southern, Trey Fallon, I am Jeff Mitchell, and we want to thank you for listening to the Frogcast.